Namaste, good morning everyone. I'd like to begin by reading this passage from Ranjit Maharaj. Ranjit Maharaj was with Nisargadatta Maharaj as a co-disciple of Siddharameshwar Maharaj. And in fact, Ranjit Maharaj's Samadhi is next to his Guru Siddharameshwar Maharaj's Samadhi, the one in Bombay, Banganga, which is the spot where Siddharameshwar Maharaj was cremated. It's a nice, beautiful sharing, actually. This is from the book Illusion versus Reality. The question: touching and hugging between master and disciple, you have said, has nothing to do with the understanding. What is the connection between the master and student regarding thinking or thought? Ranjit Maharaj, master changes your thoughts, nothing else. You have become the mind, so he changes your mind. That connection is required. The boy is ignorant. Why does he go to school? To learn something. Only putting a hand on your head can't do anything. The teacher has to teach him. He needs to understand the subject. So what can embracing do for you? What is the meaning in it? If you embrace your child, does that make him literate? He has to go to school. Question. But we have the feeling when we come to see you that something is alive in us. Ranjit Maharaj, that's okay. That feeling is why your thoughts get changed. The thoughts get some food here. The fly goes after the sweet things to eat. It doesn't sit on the bitter things. So the thoughts which you've got, the master gives some force to these thoughts. So you have to go and see him. At first, the boy doesn't want to go to school. He cries at first, but later he wants to go. Why? His mind has changed, nothing else. The only reason the master speaks is to change your mind. If your mind gets changed, then you can understand anything. Why not? What master says is very subtle. You don't know yourself. You think as a body and say, I'm here. But master says you pervade everywhere. But you cannot understand that at the moment. You are everywhere. So where to embrace and whom to embrace? If a doctor puts his hand on your head, will he cure your disease? So you see, this is what happens with the teaching. When you no longer look at people as these individual autonomous centers responsible for everything, every action, everything they say, think, and do, and when you start seeing them in light of the teaching, that they have been shaped just as you have been shaped with circumstances, income group, geographical environment, religion, and so on and so forth, all created by God, divine consciousness. They are equally an expression of the same consciousness as you are. So, what has happened? The mind, which was earlier targeting individuals, bodies, name and form body, with this perspective is reversing and acknowledging the force, the electricity that runs through everything. So this narrow casting, this narrow focus which we had, starts opening up. The embrace starts opening up because we are acknowledging this one divine force which is running the show. So it is the mind which absorbs teachings, and as these teachings get integrated into daily living, we can call it that the teaching settles in the heart, which is not a physical heart. You could call it the heart of awareness. The result is peace. All right. There are quite a few mails I have received because we have been having talks on alternate Sundays for August. So I'll try going through the most relevant ones. Once again, I thank you all for sending in these questions because they benefit everyone, including myself, to get a clearer understanding of the depth of these wisdom teachings. And I think there was some confusion. Some of you even messaged me that they didn't realize there was no talk last Sunday. So if you are on the mailing list, which is on the website, you get all the dates in the newsletters which are released there. So do follow that. All right. I am here again with a concept that I heard about many times before. But since the teaching of Advaita came to the rescue, I had completely forgotten about this. Recently, while reading through something, I stumbled on the same article, which I have read many times before. So the question goes, the article said that before taking birth, we sit with our spirit guides, higher masters, and chart out our complete soul's life plan. It said that we nearly take 2 years earth time to chart out this whole agenda. What negative karmas need to be balanced in order to learn our life's lessons? What personality traits will be there? Our parents, what kind of tradition we will have with them, our environment, religion, and even our names. It's said that we implant our own names into our parents' minds physically. We choose our date of birth and time of leaving this earth plane. We choose what negative events and trauma we need to go through in order to progress further on our soul's journey. Our soul is governed by the astrology, forces of the planets, our personality, the way we act, our internal desires and drives. So it is very critical to be born at the precise moment of time to incur all that. Whereas Rameshji says that at the moment of conception, everything is charted out. We are told at that point of time about our parents' environment and so on. When everything is already charted out before we take the actual birth, how is God's will channeled through us? Because we are the ones to sit down and take ownership that this is what is needed for us to complete our life's journey. Please shed some light on this in respect to the teaching of Advaita. So there's a mass of confusion in this mail because two concepts are trying to be tallied. And even within them, there are contradictions. Because first, it is said in this mail that we sit and chart out with our spirit guides, etc., etc., our life's journey. Then it says that the soul is governed by astrology, planets, etc., etc., and so it has to land on earth at the perfect time. This itself is a contradiction. Because in the first instance, this questioner is saying that the concept is that we chart out our journeys. In the next instance, that there are so many factors and then this has to happen at the perfect time. So you see, this is what tends to happen. The mind gets lost in concepts, compares and judges them and tries to make sense of the whole thing. Now, this is not about which concept is right or wrong. The first concept is also possible. Why? Because anything is possible in the field of consciousness. If consciousness is omniscient, omnipresent, omnipotent, all being, all action, all love, all everything, anything is possible. The point is, which concept has a direct impact on your daily living? Where is your peace to be found? Which concept delivers to you peace of mind through your relationships as well as through the events that you face in daily living? So you see, what tends to happen is we miss this. We get so consumed by concepts because they are such beautiful ideas and stories and images. But let's come back to where our feet are, here and now, in this moment. We are living day by day. So take that concept which appeals to you and which delivers to you a sense of peace, equanimity, and calm. Because if a concept is appealing to you and you really revel in it, enjoy it, and read more about it and are fascinated by it, but your daily living is exactly the same as it was prior to the exposure of the concept, then there is no deliverance. There is no deliverance. You see, we are driving the car of life through heavy traffic. A teaching which comes along shows you how to navigate this traffic. And after a year or two of practice driving through heavy traffic, you realize you are far more relaxed now than you were when you started driving through heavy traffic. And then you know that the teaching has delivered in daily living. But if you are wrapped up in a concept which you love, which appeals to you, but still after 2 years of driving through heavy traffic, which is nothing but the challenges of life, the ups and downs, the swings, if you still find that you are being tormented by the flow of daily living, then that concept has not delivered, you see. So deliverance is an important aspect of the understanding in operation. So even if we do this cross-pollination and say that before birth, we sit with our spirit guides, chart out everything, The fact is, now we are here, we are not there. We are in life, in daily living. We have no memory of that activity which transpired prior to birth. It has been wiped out. So we are here and now. We have to deal with relationships. We have to deal with situations. And so we find that concept which enables us to look at things objectively, with neutrality, and which therefore directly impacts daily life, not a fantasy life. So the choice is yours to make, as long as this criteria is kept in mind. Next question. I just wanted to share something that I have been facing in the past few months. There's an oscillation happening inwards, an oscillation between my mind patterns and a space of awareness. When this happens, I can see all the noise from that space, but the unhappiness and sadness is felt at the surface level. It doesn't penetrate inside so much, but I can feel it strongly physically. My mouth feels dry and can feel weird sinking sensation on my body. My attention goes towards all of this happening inside, and instead of watching from that space of awareness, it quickly gets identified as me. How could I stabilize my seeing, or can it never be stabilized? This is one part to my question. So let's address this part. There's an oscillation happening between my mind patterns and the space of awareness. When this happens, I see all the noise from that space, but the unhappiness and sadness is felt at the surface level. It doesn't penetrate inside so much, but I can feel it strongly physically. You see, this is not really true, because if it didn't penetrate inside so much, you would not feel it physically. The physical reaction of the body comes afterwards. The impact is first energetic at the subtle level. So it is perhaps the mind trying to convince itself that I don't feel it deeply, I feel it only at the surface level, which is not true. If the body is giving these signals, these are signs. That is the honest truth. The situation is what is called the classic flip-flop. You know, when you are introduced to the new teaching, and sometimes you can see things objectively in this space of awareness, and other times one is involved, the mind patterns, the old conditioning kicks in again and again. Flip-flop, flip-flop. That happens in many instances. But if this is the body's reaction, it is not that this sadness is at a surface level, the sadness is deep. My attention goes towards all of this happening inside, and instead of watching from that space of awareness, it quickly gets identified as me. That is why it happens. That is why the body reaction. How could I stabilize my seeing? Or can it never be stabilized? You see, it is the teaching which stabilizes the seeing. This flip-flop that sometimes there's a space of awareness, where did that come from? Was that there earlier? So the teaching comes in, brings this new perspective to life and living, things are seen in a new light, sometimes in a space of awareness and understanding. At other times, one is back to one's old patterns of reactivity and engagement and involvement. Again, sometimes one sees things from a space of awareness. That is a process. The integration takes time sometimes. It can be frustrating, and one wishes for stability, of course. Why? Because now one knows that the better way of living, so to speak, is one of living from the space of awareness. One has got a taste of that. So one wants more of it. One is tired of the old way of living. So this is a process. And as Rameshji would say, don't consider your glass half empty, consider it half full. If God has brought you here so far, why do you think he would drop you here? The second part is that I see myself secretly longing and desiring for a big bang moment. What I mean by this is a strong, impactful self-realization once and for all that intuitively knows I have arrived home. Could you please throw some light in this, on this? You see, the ego knows by experiencing. So it feels that if I experience a big bang moment, I will know. A big bang moment, which will occur at some point in the future, I don't know when, then I will know. And so now it is invested in knowing and waiting for this big bang moment. But to climb up to the roof of the house, the first step has to be taken up the stairs, then the second, then the third. And that is why Maharaj said the road is the goal. The goal is not a goalpost at the end of the journey that one is waiting for. That is how the ego operates. So rather than this big bang moment, look at your daily living. Look at what you yourself are saying you're going through, how the body reacts. At one level, you feel that the sadness is at a superficial level, yet these reactions are happening in the body. So why not deal with this day by day, incident by incident, relationship by relationship, situation by situation, and allow the teaching to do its work. Allow the teaching to do its work. This question is on behalf of every housewife that is living in a joint family. This is the person that is telling me. Indian housewife, I guess. With many relationships existing on the same plate, which is so true, because it is our culture here in many communities of these large joint families, for those of you listening from the West. And every day, I go through a series of emotions emanating as a result of balancing my equation with all these relationships. I live in a family of eight with parents-in-law, brother-in-law, co-sister, my kids and husband. I am a working lady, yet able to manage time for my kids and household chores. My co-sister is working too, but is unable to take out any time for family or housework. Though I understand that it is the nature of her professional life that she is unable to spend time at home, I have no complaints doing the household work like I would anyways have to do if I were to live in a nuclear family. In spite of this understanding, the ego at times takes control and I feel that I am a fool being misused by others and by my co-sister herself. The pain aggravates me when I see my mother-in-law doing favors to her over me. And I feel she gets benefits over me, which makes me lose my temper and control. However, in situations like this, I try to connect to your teachings, but there is still something that I need to fully understand and accept my position here. Please guide what is the best practice to follow in order to maintain peace in daily living. This teaching is not going to tell you what to do. I keep saying that again and again and again. One has to do precisely that which one thinks and feels one should do in a situation. Now, I know that this is a common situation. I have had friends and their wives who were, you know, the wife was married into the family. It was a joint family. Eventually, they separated and moved out and so on and so forth. So many of us are familiar with this situation. It is quite a classic situation and one that has been exploited, unfortunately, by the Indian soap operas. Because the ego loves to see drama and story in the life of others, family lives. Now, this point is very important in this mail, because anyone would feel this. I feel that I am a fool being misused by others. It may be that you are being misused. You would know it is situational, it is contextual. Now, you would also know whether you are able to take a position, say something, express yourself, or you want to suffer silently. Maybe there's too much pressure, you are unable to speak up. That is also possible. And generally, when one is of a timid personality, this does happen. Others' egos take dominance and control over the timid person in a joint family. But what needs to be looked at is, with the light of the teaching, look at the dynamics objectively. Everyone is playing out their role, their script, based on their conditioning, based on their nature. And so are you. So even when you feel frustrated and angry, let's say, in a situation like this, you will find that with this teaching, it is no longer as personal and directed as at individuals like it used to be earlier. Anger may still come up, especially if you are unable to maneuver yourself out of the situation, if you are unable to express yourself and change the dynamic. It can happen to anyone. But the beauty of this teaching is the personal hate and malice and spite and, you know, all that quality of reaction starts dropping away. In fact, very early on, when I started giving satsangs at home, which maybe now 4 or 5 years ago, I'm not sure, a girl had come who was, it was she, her husband, living with her parents-in-law, the husband's parents. And she read the book, The Buddha's Sword. And she said it so transformed her relationship with her parents-in-law because she just saw them in this new light, that they were playing out their script based on how their parents brought them up, perhaps their environment when they grew up. And today, they have such a relationship of mutual respect and admiration. So in her case, she had the ability to not only absorb this teaching, but perhaps express herself. Maybe she had that strength and God gave it to her. And it just transformed the whole situation. So it all depends on the individual. So I can fully understand this because I'm familiar with this situation. My friends have told me about it. It is not easy because you have to balance a lot of equations out. A lot of dynamics come into play. But see things in light of the teaching. Even when your frustration arises, see it in light of the teaching. Even if anger arises, see it in light of the teaching. And by, slowly, you might find that when you express yourself, it is not with that angst and that thrust of personal doership-based emotion. You may be expressing yourself in a different way in time to come with your family, with your parents-in-law, and allow that to happen. That's all that this teaching has to offer. The teaching will not take away your pain, but it can take away your suffering, which is involvement in the pain in the moment. Horizontal involvement in the duration of time, psychological involvement by blaming, condemning, hatred, malice, jealousy, envy, pride, arrogance, guilt, shame, blah, 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 blah. All that is finished. It is burned to ash. That is the gift of the teaching. Not a small gift, because while it appears that all that is taken away, what is happening is now you are abiding in your being, in conscious presence here and now in this moment, available, fully available. Not in an imaginary future, nor in a dead past. Right here, right now. This is a follower of Shirdi Sai Baba, whose father got critically sick 20 years ago when he was 65. We could get him admitted in one of the best hospitals, but the doctors told us he might need a liver transplant and his chances of survival is only 50% as he was suffering from hepatitis. We were totally heartbroken, but our family kept our faith that we would not lose hope and prayed day and night to Baba for his well-being. Baba blessed us. My dad was discharged after 1 month. The doctors did tell us he would live maximum for a year. We were thankful to Baba that we had some hope and time with him. My dad was a very loving and affectionate father, and he led a disciplined life with strict dietary changes. We kept thanking Baba and kept praying for his good health. My dad recovered and his health kept improving. My faith got stronger with each passing year. My dad passed away on 8th May this year due to COVID. Both my mom and dad got infected with COVID. Mummy recovered, but Papa's condition deteriorated. With great difficulty, we could get a bed in a good hospital. My dad didn't want to be admitted, but we convinced him that he should go and he would get better and come back home. He called us many times from the hospital that he is not liking the hospital environment and he wants to come back home. It was very painful for us to take a decision, and we convinced him to stay there, and he agreed. It was a very difficult time for us as we were not able to meet him in the COVID ward. The next day, his condition worsened and his oxygen levels dropped and he became unconscious. The following day, he passed away. Losing him this way left me totally shattered and traumatized. There's so much guilt and pain that why didn't we bring him back from the hospital when he so much wanted to come back home? So many negative thoughts keep disturbing me. Like, he wasn't given proper treatment. He got anxious in the hospital and got cardiac arrest. I started to look for some peace and came across your videos on destiny, which helped to see my situation in a different perspective. Still, I have many questions that keep disturbing me. Like, despite protecting my parents so much, why did they contract the virus? Because it was God's will. You did what you thought and felt you should do, is offer protection. The results are not in your control. Why did my dad have to suffer like this all by himself alone in the hospital? And we couldn't meet him or talk to him in his last moments. Because unfortunately, it was his destiny to be alone. He was such a noble man. He would take all precautions. Why did this happen to him? What is this connection between being a noble man and getting COVID? Has God said that if you're noble, nothing will happen to you? Who gave Ramana Maharshi cancer? Who gave Ramakrishna cancer? Were they not noble? Oh, if we do good deeds, nothing will happen to us. Isn't that arrogance of the ego? So self-righteous. If you have the faith that Sai Baba saved your father 20 years ago, then why not consider that it was his time to go, so Sai Baba took him? Why you want to have only Sai Baba doing good things for you, like saving your father, and then judging when things happen which you don't like? I know this is hard to accept, but isn't this reality? Everything is God's will, but we want God's will to be a certain way, and therefore we rationalize. I protected this person. How could he get COVID? He was a noble man. How could God do this to him? You see, this is all about control and domination. This is how the ego works and thinks that it can guarantee outcomes. And the biggest point here is the guilt. We forced our father to go into hospital and he died alone. It is the guilt which is painful. But the healing balm here is that you did it out of your best intentions for your father. You didn't know that this would happen. So take heart. The intentions were out of love. You wanted him to get the best care. You wanted him to recover well. Even though he wanted to come back home, you and your family and whoever decided he should stay there, you all used your buddhi, your discretion, your judgment. Unfortunately, it didn't work out. All we can do is do our best in a given situation. Thereafter, the results are not in our control. They have never been in our control. These defining moments in life, when we lose loved ones, these are wake-up calls. Wake-up calls for the ego to wake up from the slumber of doership and thinking it's in charge and control of everything in life, would he have had a chance of survival if we had brought him home from the hospital? God alone knows. Maybe he would have suffered more. Who knows? I have never been so disturbed by any situation in my life, but I'm somehow not being able to handle this loss. And I have been questioning Baba, why did this happen this way? I know each one of us has to face the loss of our parents, and I feel blessed that my dad lived a good life and was 85 years of age when he left us. 85, you should be on your knees thanking God that you had a parent who lived that long, and his passing should be a celebration. But the opposite is happening. Why me? Why did this happen to me? Why did I send him to the hospital though he wanted to come home? I am feeling guilty. I am feeling painful. Me. Of course, pain will be there. Of losing a parent, like everyone's pain. But this obsession the me has invested in this situation. You see, now the foundations have been shaken. It is the time to wake up. If it is your destiny, but allow the situations in life, what happens in life, and the teachings, some space, so that you can really look at this game, this Leela, in a different light, and be grateful, be thankful that your father, who almost lost his life many years ago, lived so long. Look at the blessings. Look at what God has placed before you. And realize that in life, there are no guarantees. You can't really connect the dots. A lot of things don't make sense. Never will. Because ultimately, life is not meant to be understood. It is meant to be lived. If you try understanding and thinking your way through life, you're going to be caught in a labyrinth, in a maze of the mind, going round and round in circles, trying to find a way out. Through control, domination, and trying to guarantee results of actions. Lucky are those who realize this early in life. Unfortunate are those who don't and carry this on till a very old age. I think we'll keep the others for another Sunday, since much time has passed. I'll just separate the sheets, otherwise I might repeat the same questions and answers the next time. All right. If anyone would like to share something or ask something, they are welcome to do so now. And if not, then I can look at some more questions. Yes. Yes, Ramanathan.
Namaste, Gautamji.
Namaste.
I don't have any specific, just want to, what is the role of tradition in this? Reason is, based on what JK has thought, what Bhagwan has thought, I was of the view that once I reach 45, I'll take Vanaprastha. Financially, God's grace, I'm well off. no issues with, let's say, financially. I wanted to take Vanaprastha, and so that I can. Vanaprastha, of course, I, as you would know, not necessarily moving to a forest. It's basically being at home with my family and practicing the teachings. And if required, fill my time with a small, small work. Right? That's what I was of the view. But the circumstances changed out. I had to take up another job because my colleagues asked me to take up and wanted to work with them. That's how it is. Where is the role of of our traditions, where we have that grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyasa? I'm not trying to tally, of course. I'm just trying to see someone who wants to do that. Where is the role of vanaprastha? And if you don't use the brahmastra of God's will, if I ask you, right? So that guidance will be of great help. Because JK told, I still remember, I pasted it in this one. Mobile also kept it. He said, at the age of 45, leave all that is sensate and see what happens when you meditate. Maybe the process will work for you. And I still keep that with me. But I also think what Bhagavan has said, that you can't decide to quit the job when you want to. You can't decide to do everything. But somehow my heart is always in Vanaprastha.
Yes.
The family also knows.
Yes. So I'll tell you something quite funny. You know, if you talk to an astrologer, he will tell you that, especially those who are on the spiritual path, they can even tell you whether you'll run away to the Himalayas or an ashram, or you are astrologically confined to grihastha or household life and living as a regular person. It is there in the horoscope, right? And whatever is destined is going to happen. So no matter how much you may want to run off to the forest, if it is your destiny, God's will, as you said, Brahmastra, you will be there. But that is why also, you see, Ramana Maharshi himself kept pointing at this thing, that wearing ochre robes is not going to impress me. I'm not concerned with the outer. It is what is within. So why not live in Vanaprastha, live in the ascetic foreign life in daily living? Because your destiny is to be engaged. Your destiny is to be with family, your friends, your job, whatever it may be, have happened. In the mind, in the heart, you feel like an ascetic, right? But you are placed in this situation, karmically, destiny-wise, call it what you will. So let this whole journey be within. Let the shackles of attachments, involvement, etc., be on the inside. And that too is tradition. Tradition doesn't have to be an external manifestation of being a certain way. If it is not your destiny to escape to the Himalayas, it will not happen. And you yourself have said that you wanted to, but life is keeping you in this situation. So there's nothing which is not tradition, you see. The question is, there are external manifestations of it, there are internal manifestations of it. What is the objective? What is the requirement? And where do I stand? If I have this feeling of vanaprastha, of running away to the forest, and I'm unable to do so, let me create this forest where my feet are. Let me engage with the world, yet being detached from it. And if you are not meant to run away, you will not run away. It's as simple as that. But it doesn't mean your journey is stuck or stopped. It doesn't mean that. It's a continuing journey with each breath till the number of breaths are exhausted. It's as simple as that. Does that answer your question in any way?
Oh, it was muted actually. Sorry, the host had muted. Thanks, Gautamji. I'm reconciled to the situation because I was trying to somehow reconcile the traditional way of doing it. And I had wanted to, I lost charm of all the things that I do, right? That's the primary thing, right? I love the teachings of what Bhagavan has taught, what you have teach, what Ramesh ji, I've been going through so many videos of Ramesh ji, especially the suggested the one in Germany, Advaita House. I went through loops and loops of going through that. It gives me a lot of peace. It also gives me that I don't want to have regret at the last day. I didn't put my best, right? Whether it happened or not is something that, but there's one regret I don't want to have, that I didn't do the japa.
Sure. And you see that also, Ramanathan, it could be your sanskars, it could be where you're coming from, you know, it's also conditioning, what your conditioning was when you were younger. Like, for example, let's take someone who kept seeing his parents doing japamala, right, when he was young. That became his conditioning also. So all those factors fuel, let's say, tradition. But the point is still that you are here and now in a situation placed by God. So all your sanskars, all your wishes may be towards a particular tradition. It's not happening. That doesn't mean that the essence of the tradition is lost, because actually there is no external internal, there is only consciousness. So this is perhaps an opportunity that to see that while my preferences run away, my preference is japa, whatever it be, I am being forced by the hand of God to look at just daily living. He has created my circumstances, put me there, and within that, let me find my peace.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Uttara.
Hi, Gautamji. How are you?
Good, good. How are you?
Good, thank you. Gautamji brought the example of driving a car today, with the example that I love about your teaching. I actually witnessed that happen to me 3 weeks ago. So I'm just going to share how the teaching has touched my life over a period of time. So I don't have a question. It's just a sharing of an experience, and I thought people could benefit from it. So 3 weeks ago on a Saturday, so I've been with the teaching for about a year and a half now, since March 2020, since the first lockdown, I think. That's when Advaita found me. And I've been with the teaching for about, I would say, about 18 months. So what happened a bit about me is I'm a short fuse. I get really angry with myself as well as with the situation. But 3 weeks ago, what happened on a Saturday was a culmination of all bad events happening on one single day with me. So I went to a medical center to take my daughter for a dentist appointment, and I slipped and fell, and I injured my right leg. And just a laugh came out of me, rather than anger or anything. I just smiled and I said, oh, God made me fall in front of a medical center, injured my right leg. And how convenient, I could just go to the pharmacy and get the medicine. So I just laughed, and my daughter was like, are you not in pain? And I said, yeah, the pain is there, but I'm grateful that it happened in front of a medical center, because I could just go to the pharmacy and get the medicine. So my daughter just looked at me weirdly and she walked away. She laughed with me because it was a funny situation, because I had slipped and fell in front of the entire parking lot. So it was funny. And we both laughed. And when I left her at the medical center, and I went and got my medicine and tended to my leg. So that was in the morning. And in the afternoon, I was supposed to pick her up from another event. Took the car out, and the signal, a big bolt went through my car tire, and the car tire literally burst and it got punctured in the middle of the road, in the middle of a traffic. So I had to park my car in the side, and again another laugh came out. It was like, how is this happening all in one day? And I was like, I have an injured leg and a tire and a car that was not running in the middle of the road. But it was just a smile. And then the next thing was, what was meant to be done was to be done. So called up the road service and called up Uber, called up the towing truck. And, you know, it was a natural thing. I didn't even realize what I had done till I came back to reflect on it on that day, which I usually do during meditation. And I reflected that not once during the whole day I had blamed myself or anyone. Usually when such things happen, you kind of go, oh, you should have been careful, how stupid of you, how idiotic of you to do this or do that, or could you not see down and walk, and you've now got injured, how are you going to go to work, and all that. You know, all those dialogues were just not there. I realized, oh, this is how it is. Like, previously I would do that, I would blame myself, if not others. That blame was just not there. Just a smile, acceptance, and just what needed to be done after that. But that day was, I think, the God or the grace was trying to test me to see if I have learned the teaching. And I was like, this is how it is. So that's why I was like, normally I would, knowing myself better than anyone else, I would blame myself for not taking extra caution. So that day I realized, oh, the teaching, the slow poison of the thinking mind had started to work.
Yeah, that's true. That's beautiful.
Yeah, so I thought I would share. Like I said, it was a small event, but it was a day that had all the mishaps happen to me. But like I said, it was just a smile. And at the end of the day, I thought, as a single woman, I could organize all of that with the injured leg. And I was like,
That's what happens. Thank you. That was very beautiful to share that. And you see, these are, let's call them tests, you know, the test of the teaching itself to see the impact in daily living. This is how you know, you see, this is how you know when you are faced with situations. And it could also be that the thought may arise, oh my God, I was careless. And it will just cut off there. You know, there will be no involvement and there'll be no blame, because even that's allowed, you see. It's not that that may not happen, but the drama ends there. The story ends there. It's finished.
Ends there. Yeah. 100%. Like I said, it was beautiful. I didn't think about it in that moment, but at the end of the day, when I was reflecting with my right injured leg, I was like reflecting on the day and I realized, oh, I didn't have any dialogue with myself or cursing or scolding anyone, including myself. And I saw grace happen. Like I said, I got injured in front of a pharmacy. I had access to immediate medicine. And the tow truck guy who came to tow my car away, he was amazing. He was wonderful. And I saw grace prevail, even though the situation was not the best. Like I said, I was holding back traffic and I'm sure others were cursing at me, but I was not cursing at anyone. I was not cursing at anyone. And I was like, it is what it is. And just moved on. But I didn't reflect on it till the end of the day. And I thought, this is how the teaching has worked in me, because I could notice that change within me rather than on others. I noticed it within me, because the old Utra 18 months ago would have been like stressed out or been cursing or would be blaming myself or doing something, but none of that happened.
That's beautiful. And also what happens is, if people are cursing you when you got the traffic stuck, you have to just smile and say, they are not cursing me, they are cursing God.
True.
The thing is, we stop taking this delivery that they cursed me.
True.
If you stop taking that delivery, life becomes much simpler.
Very true. Very true.
You see, I think Buddha gave that beautiful anecdote where he was walking and someone started abusing him and he just kept quiet. And his disciple who was with him was shocked and told the Buddha that, how can you tolerate this level of abuse? Little bit is fine, but you're not saying anything. So Buddha replied, look, if someone gives me a gift and I don't take it, the gift stays with the giver of the gift. If someone abuses me and I don't take delivery of it, it stays with the abuser. It has nothing to do with me. Thank you for sharing, Uttara. That was beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. I think I did want to read out something, but I'll quickly do that. I'm also, we have one more hand up, I think. Yes, Vandana.
Hello, Gautam.
Hello.
So I just wanted to ask you, you know, you used a word in during one of your conversations today, a negative karma. I mean, if Advaita is the teaching and which we are following, why do we qualify this karma as negative or positive? It's every karma is under the divine will. So who are we to sit in judgment and use this word and qualify it further?
I agree completely, but I was reading out what someone had written.
Yeah, I know.
This is absolutely the topic.
This came to me that how are we sitting in judgment and qualifying the karma?
Absolutely right. Absolutely. Because you see, we classify anything which we don't like as negative.
Yeah, but
it's quite amazing. And karma is karma. Even Rameshji would keep saying that the actual definition of the word karma means action.
Yeah.
Not what we have overlaid the word with. And if so, our action is without the baggage of doership. It is pure action. I mean, as a simple example, if we, if someone says something to us which we don't like, and we feel the need to respond, when our response is without this baggage of doership, that this person did this to me, when our response is objective and neutral, the karma in the sense many people refer to is not, that baggage is not carried by the action. It's pure action, a pure response, not a karmic action which becomes an action-reaction loop like a tennis match and each person blaming the other. You see, that is what happens. In that sense, as you said, karma is karma.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right. I'm just going to change the view so I can see all of you. And let me see if I can tackle this. It was quite beautiful, actually. For those who are familiar with the book, I Am That, Nisargadatta Maharaj talks with Nisargadatta Maharaj. I received this email from someone who's obviously immersed in the teachings of Advaita. In the book, I Am That, chapter 28, which if you do have the book, I would in fact suggest you read it, because you will find that the questioner is asking the most beautiful questions. You will find actually that someone is talking at a very refined level with Maharaj. And I did mark this chapter myself when I had read it. So when I opened up the book, I read it again. And you will enjoy this if you have it. Now, this the mail which has come to me says, in the book, I Am That, chapter 28, entitled All Suffering Born of Desire. All suffering is born of desire. There is this juvenile officer's exchange of feelers on realization. This person having achieved a certain state of realization, but he is yet asking questions about love between man and woman and sex predominance, etc. in this conversation. So what the person is asking me is that this person who is talking to Maharaj in chapter 28 is obviously quite realized. Yet he is asking questions on love and happiness and sex. I am taken aback. Maharaj's response was spot on, but why such an exchange on mundane topics when the person posing these questions appears himself to have been a realized being? Kindly clarify. Who has decided that love and sex is not worthy of discussion and is mundane? The reader has decided it, or this realized being whom you call realized talking to Maharaj? For him, everything is relevant. He is exploring all aspects of living, life, and relationships. He has not held back from Maharaj saying, why should I not ask Maharaj about this? And what has he asked? What is the place of sex in love? Such a beautiful question. So you see, this is what happens when we read books. We bring so much of our conditioning into the reading that we are already judging the conversation and the person having the conversation with Maharaj and saying, why is he asking about that when he's asking such deep questions? We have created the split. Therefore, it begets the question, why don't you ask yourself your views on sex and love? Perhaps it's something to reflect on. Maybe you'll hear something beautiful. You'll get a new dimension of understanding. Who knows? And so I'm going to close on this two paragraphs of chapter 28, which I found most beautiful, which I had marked many years ago. The questioner says, a friend of mine used to have horrible dreams night after night. Going to sleep would terrorize him. Nothing could help him. The Maharaj, company of the truly good, satsang, would help him. Questioner, life itself is a nightmare. Maharaj, noble friendship, satsang, is the supreme remedy for all ills, physical as well as mental. Generally, one cannot find such friendship, questioner. Maharaj, seek within. Your own self is your best friend. Questioner, why is life so full of contradictions? Maharaj, it serves to break down mental pride. We must realize how poor and powerless we are. As long as we delude ourselves by what we imagine ourselves to be, to know, to have, to do, we are in a sad plight indeed. And lastly, towards the end of this three-page conversation, chapter 28, the questioner says, I must be in the right mood to examine myself fruitfully. Maharaj, you must be serious, intent, and truly interested. You must be full of goodwill for yourself. Questioner, I am selfish, all right. Maharaj, you are not. You are all the time destroying yourself and your own by serving strange gods, inimical and false. By all means, be selfish the right way. Wish yourself well. Labor at what is good for you. Destroy all that stands between you and happiness. Be all, love all, be happy. Make happy. No happiness is greater.